since then, the district attorney's office and the police have been still arresting people under that law and still threatening to prosecute them and hassling them up and down. But when it comes to a trial, I have not heard of one panhandling trial since that time. So they can actually get people to serve time in jail for panhandling, but only if they can get them to plea bargain and to accept a guilty plea. And a note here on this, don't plead guilty unless you really fully understand your options. That's always my advice to people, even though in some cases, obviously, you may want to plead guilty to get a lesser sentence. But the whole business of the public defender's office is to get you to take a plea so you don't have to go to jail. And their business is not to defend you and give you your best possible result, even though they may say they want that, and some of the public defenders actually think they want that. That's not how the system works. That's not how it's funded. That's not how it's set up. That's not what goes on. So you have to watch your own ass. You have to gather your own support. You have to learn to use the law library yourself. You have to form legal self-help groups. You have to contact organizations that will help you, such as HUF, which could be reached at 423-HUF, SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, another organization which concerns itself with police abuse, 475-2012, Welfare Parents Support Group, an organization concerned with poor parents and keeping the rights of those families alive, 458-9070. There's also, as I said, this Downtown Mediator Group is now actually formed an interim committee, an interim review group on downtown problems, which will take, if you've been hassled by a merchant, or if you have a problem with a merchant, whatever it is, you've been excluded from her or his store, give a call to 454-0605. That's Kim Hallinan's number. Or 426-7701, that's Linda LeMaster's number. She is the also on the interim review group on downtown problems. Both these women will help you get into a mediated situation with the merchant in question, if that merchant is amenable to a mediation. And I must say, as I mentioned before, I want to commend my old antagonist, Neil Coonerty, the owner of the bookshop Santa Cruz, who still threatens to arrest me if I come in his store, but he has nonetheless, apparently, if I understand properly, agreed to a mediation with Diana, the a woman who apparently feels she was abused verbally by him, who feels she was unfairly excluded from his store and barred from Georgiana's Cafe about 2 weeks ago. And the Georgiana's Cafe management has said to me through, I guess, their manager that the Diana can come back to that cafe if she agrees not to sell jewelry from the outside tables, which was apparently their point of concern. Diana has some continuing concerns and just told me she may call in to do a mediation with Neil Coonerty about whether she can come back into the bookshop. But I think that this process of really immediately dealing with these questions when they come up, when problems between merchants and ordinary folks, non-merchants, arise, it's real good to have a kind of a truth squad that rushes in there. I mean, I support the right of people to demonstrate. I think it's very important that that be a backup to alert the community to abuses and injustices. But if these issues can be quietly, peacefully, and thoroughly worked out, if merchants are willing to be reasonable, if people on the street are willing to be reasonable, that's even better. So, be reasonable and give me a call here at 427-3772, which is Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you'd like to make any comments on anything I've said, set me straight in my thinking, or add a new dimension to the show, sing a good song, or just share some of your thoughts with us on what's been cooking here on the air. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM in Santa Cruz. So maybe what we need here is a little breathing space and a chance for you to hear somebody else other than me, because I know my voice is a wonderful thing, but there are other voices. And here's a voice I like. It's Mark Levy. He's a folk singer. He came out and supported us on May 11th.
better known as Joe,
when we, and at other times,
murdered by
demonstrations to support the rights of poor people downtown.
His will said that his ashes be strewn across the land, so flowers that we see to die will rise up strong and stand. We sing his songs to fan the flames and talk about him much. The ashes of this rebel voice are still too hot to touch. Joe's corpse lay in Chicago, where 30,000 marched. They flew the wobbly banner high above the throng it arched. The workers sang and cheered his name, they did not eulogize. They honored Joe Hill's last request, don't mourn, organize. Then the union took Joe's body, which then they did cremate. His ashes stuffed in envelopes and mailed to every state, except, of course, to Utah, for Joe had clearly said, don't leave me here in Utah, there I would be caught dead. We sing his songs to fan the flames and talk about him much. The ashes of this rebel voice are still too hot to touch. Then someone in the mailroom discovered what was up. The postmaster was summoned the mailing to disrupt. An envelope tore open in the canceling machine. Was just Joe's way of saying automation is obscene. With patriotic murmur, this postmaster was seized. He treated that poor envelope as if it was diseased. He said, I won't deliver such subversive mail. So for a while, Joe had to wait in some dead letter pile. We sing his songs to fan the flames and talk about him much. The ashes of his rebel voice are still too hot to touch. At long last, the post office sent Joe's ashes to D.C. to the archives like an artifact of ancient history. The Wapis in Chicago asked Betty B. sent home. They wouldn't see him cataloged down in that catacomb. So Joe's back with the Wapis, and thus concludes my tale. But if there is a wall, I might say, don't trust the mail. We'll build that one big union before Joe's ash gets cold. And we'll bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old. We sing his songs to fan the flames and talk about him much. The ashes of this rebel voice are still too hot to touch. We sing his songs to fan the flames and talk about him much. The ashes of this rebel voice are still too hot to touch. The ashes of this rebel voice are still too hot to touch.
I've heard preachers preach about the duties of a wife. I've heard husbands talk about the same. They say a woman must respect zygote's right to life, but every sperm does not deserve a name. Every sperm does not deserve a name. No, every sperm does not deserve a name. If so, each man would found a nation every time he came. So every sperm does not deserve a name. Now some say women don't deserve to have the right to choose, that if they get with child they are to blame. But it takes two to do the deed, so why should women lose? And every sperm does not deserve a name. Every sperm does not deserve a name. No, every sperm does not deserve a name. If so, each man would found a nation every time he came. So every sperm does not deserve a name. Down through the ages, things have changed since Adam dated Eve. Since that first couple tried to hide their
of every sperm that makes it to an egg and stakes its claim to manifest gestation till that fetus comes to term. But every sperm does not deserve a name. How could it be a man can't seem to get it through his head that women's bodies aren't some kind of game? And if it was the other way and he gave birth instead, he'd say every sperm does not deserve a name. Every sperm does not deserve a name. No, Lord, mama, every sperm does not deserve a name. If so, each man would found a nation every time he came. So every sperm does not deserve a name. Every sperm does not deserve a name. No, every sperm does not deserve a name. If so, each man would found a nation every time he came. So every sperm does not deserve a, just ask Venus or Minerva, every sperm does not deserve a name.
Yes. Stop naming those sperm. It's Mark Levy in his tape, Heroes, Sheroes. A lot of good songs. Mark Levy is, as I said, came down to the 1994 Sit on the Sidewalk, Go to Jail demonstrations. He actually composed a song for that, which I used to sing the chorus to, went something like this. Well, there ain't no sitting in the city of Santa Cruz with its redwood trees and its ocean views. It's the home of surfers and sad gurus. But there ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. No, don't be caught sitting in Santa Cruz. And there are a lot of verses to it. It's a good song, which, as far as I know, has not yet appeared on tape or CD, but we're hopeful for the future, since it still is the case that there ain't no sitting in the city of Santa Cruz unless you're sitting away from the shops. I mean, that's, those public spaces are sacred. But apropos of every sperm does not deserve a name, I want to get back to final assault on Linda Edwards that took place before she died June 3rd. Linda Edwards, a homeless activist who fought for a decade here in the most high-profile and articulate, passionate way to bring issues of injustice against poor people to light. She died of liver cancer, and she was, before she died in her hospital bed, or I should say in her rest home bed, she was the victim of a sexual battery by another activist, Brian Flanagan. That is at least how we see it and how we read it. How I read it, I wasn't a witness, but I compiled the reports and I talked to the witness, Linda LeMaster, and from Brian's own admissions that he had wild and wonderful sex with her when she was in a comatose state. And from the fact that he was in close proximity to her and touching her, in bed with her, in fact, 3 hours before she died, and she couldn't communicate in the last 3 days she was alive in any way, verbally or any other significant way, because she was so far gone. Anyway, we've been trying to get this matter investigated by the Sheriff Coroner's Office and then hopefully prosecuted by the District Attorney. Not a happy case for me, because I'm a friend of Brian's, and I think he's done a lot of good work in the past. But unfortunately, the actions in this case tend to speak for themselves. And the report finally came back from the man who's covering this case, the detective named Craig Wilson with the Sheriff's Office, who's reachable by phone, although he said he's not too eager to talk to anybody. But I'm going to encourage people to contact the District Attorney's Office and the Sheriff's Office to make sure this case proceeds to some kind of real charge, even if it may be difficult to convict on. I think that it's useful to, for the safety of future women in this situation and other people who are doing similar things, essentially exploiting vulnerable women, to know that the county is takes a dim view of this, and the community takes a dim view of this. The community says no to this. Anyway, the report came back from the Department of Justice. They did an autopsy on Linda Edwards and a body inspection, and there was no evidence of semen, according to the report. Apparently no evidence of touching in that way, but this report, I want to point out, was done a week after she died. The autopsy was done a week after she died. The results just got back yesterday or the day before. So it's what we're left with are the testimony of witnesses, the night staff at the nursing home, Brian Flanagan's own admissions, and his own writings about it. And that should be sufficient, plus the testimony of the nurses that that Linda Edwards was unable to give any kind of informed consent, and Linda Edwards had in fact made it real clear that she didn't want him around, yet he stayed there in bed with her frequently throughout that night and had to be talked out of her hospital room, out of her rest home room. So we're urging people to contact the district attorney's office, 454-2400, to ask that this case be prosecuted, and to call the sheriff's office at 454-2311, tell Detective Wilson, commend him on pressing the case and ask him to proceed with all deliberate speed and offering whatever help you can and support for a full airing of the situation. I should point out that Wilson, as of yesterday, had received no calls from the public. So any listeners who are particularly concerned with this issue might get it together and get to a phone, because he hasn't heard from you. And the phone number again is 454-2311, and the district attorney's office is 454-2400. Linda Edwards' ashes are currently in the Poganip, where they were distributed illegally and criminally by a secret team of people and her friends. So her spirit is throughout our town. Her spirit lives in this radio station and in you. And her remains are in the Poganip. So if you take a walk up there, you can think about her, because that's where she is. Curfews. The issue I mentioned at the beginning of the hour, the issue that I wanted to sound out Rebecca on, and I encourage anybody who has perspective on this and experience with this, or just thoughts about it, to give a call to 427-3772, our radio station here, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. Right now I'm going to read you an article from the San Francisco Examiner of July 12th. By a man named Vincent Schiraldi, who is described as executive director of the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice, a private, nonprofit public policy organization. Curfews, good policy or politics? To anyone who watched last year's statewide election, it should come as no surprise that in San Francisco's mayoral race, voters are already being subjected to simplistic, tough-on-crime measures emanating from City Hall. This month's a youth curfew is as unlikely to reduce crime as Governor Wilson's three strikes and you're out law, but just as sure to gain its architect, Mayor Jordan, the desired media attention. Research on curfews has proved them to be a waste of police resources, an ineffective deterrent to crime, and a further wedge between minority youth and police. While elected officials responsible for the creation of such curfews point to their successes, few can provide the data to back up their claims. In Detroit, for example, a youth curfew was initiated in response to that city's now infamous Devil's Night. Despite combining a curfew with an increase in police presence and free cable television on Halloween, arsons in Detroit rose from 223 in 1989 to 441 in 1994. An evaluation of Detroit's youth curfew reveals that while there was a decrease in juvenile crime during curfew hours, the city's overall incidence of juvenile crime actually increased. San Jose's curfew is often touted as the model for crime control in that South Bay city. But like Detroit, a statistical as opposed to political analysis of the curfew's results show the practice to be wanting. San Jose law has shown a displacement effect, much like Detroit's. During curfew hours, juvenile crime has indeed dropped by 13%, but during non-curfew hours, juvenile crime has increased by 12%. Further, while 34% of San Jose's population is Latino, 61% of those detained under the curfew laws have been Latino. Angrily targeting those without a voice, first the homeless and now youth, is a political no-brainer. It generally costs politicians no votes and makes them look like they're actually doing something. Unfortunately, solutions such as the proposed curfew inevitably result in a false sense of security that somehow the real problems affecting young people's lives, unemployment, inadequate educations, unequal opportunities, and substance abuse, will be wiped away magically. It is perhaps understandable that Jordan's office would want to divert our attention from his administration's shortcomings with a false hope of a simple cure. After all, that tactic worked well for Wilson's campaign. Unfortunately, like bromides that help relieve short-term physical symptoms, what we are left with after election night parties are over is an ulcer that continues to fester within. That was Vincent Schiraldi in the July 12th San Francisco Examiner. And, of course, I agree with him, and so that's why the article interests me. I suppose I should really be reading you articles I disagree with and that you might disagree with, so we can get a little debate going here, but I would also like to encourage you to start thinking about how to oppose the curfews and how to start working on some real alternatives here, because we're going to be confronted with that curfew proposal in August. That's coming down the pike. Now today, July 14th, is a day in federal court when Free Radio in Berkeley is going to be going to court. I guess it's Oakland, actually, where they're going to court. And the report I get from Carol Denny and from Keith McHenry up north, both activists in the East Bay area, is that the FCC is again going to stall. And we aren't going to know if this is true until later today. And I will hopefully brief you on this next show and let you know what's happening in case somebody else doesn't. I suspect the word will probably get out before then. For those who've just tuned in or aren't aware, Free Radio here and in the Bay Area has been under attack by the Federal Communications Commission, but Federal Judge Watt Wilken has refused to grant the FCC's request for an injunction to close down the radio station and fine them, saying that there are real free speech issues and that the FCC has to address. It can't just say, well, you got to have a 100-watt transmitter or else we're going to close you down. That's not enough. You know, that's their criterion currently, among other things, for giving a license. If I'm not mistaken about that number, I might be there. But you need a lot more wattage than this radio station and other pirate, underground, or alternate radio stations have. So we'll learn what the FCC is doing in court. They've been, in January, that was when that decision came down, that the FCC could not close down underground stations. That was reiterated, I believe, in May. And now here in July, we'll find out whether there's been any change. But the predictions of those on the Free Radio side are that there will be another delay because the FCC does not have its poo-poo together on this issue. But more on that when it happens. Food Not Bombs in San Francisco is scrambling. Food Not Bombs, as you may know, is an organization which feeds poor people, a self-help group concerned with both feeding and publicizing the realities of poverty in urban areas and also showing the amount of waste and misappropriation of money in our modern society today. Food Not Bombs in San Francisco has in the past been under a particularly virulent attack by the political authorities, particularly Mayor Jordan, who we just heard Vincent Schiraldi refer to in his curfews article. Juggernaut Jordan, as I call him, had over 450, well, thereabouts, people arrested in San Francisco for essentially serving free food or marching in demonstrations with Food Not Bombs. In a scandal up there involving hundreds of thousands of dollars and hundreds of police officers, several instances of brutality, and not one case taken by the DA for any kind of real charges. It was all sheer police state tactics to harass, intimidate, and punish Food Not Bombs for its ongoing political and food programs. And Food Not Bombs, after that episode, which was the actually two-week period when they were holding their international gathering at the same time as the United Nations had its 50th anniversary celebration in San Francisco, where the UN was founded. Now that all those folks are gone from the Food Not Bombs from all over the country came to Food Not Bombs' gathering, and the UN folks did their thing, the police actually have been ignoring Food Not Bombs, and ironically, Food Not Bombs has been having trouble getting its food out. I think they missed three meals last week, and the week before they also missed three meals. This is the report from activist Tub of Grub Tom Osher, or Osher, up in San Francisco, who I talked to this morning. They've actually scaled back operations there, so they are no longer doing a lunch meal, except that they're giving bagels and literature at lunch, which is a thin food. Usually they give out rice and soup and vegetarian stuff, and it's somewhat more substantial. Food Not Bombs in Santa Cruz is also having a similar problem. The meals on Saturday haven't come out for the last three Saturdays. The Wednesday meal that I was at 2 days ago was an hour and a half late, or an hour and 45 minutes late, later than usual. I'm not complaining, per se. I'm saying that there is a problem that more people need to volunteer to serve, to cook, to pick up food, to find kitchens that are usable, because otherwise it just won't happen. And if you want to volunteer for serving free food, for helping with Food Not Bombs, give a call to 425-3445. That's 425-3455. Food Not Bombs, one of the most successful up to now and important local organizations for mobilizing people, mobilizing poor people, maintaining a presence on the streets in Santa Cruz in the face of the new right-wing gentrification assault that is ironically being championed by so-called liberals and progressives in places like Berkeley, Santa Cruz, Arcata. Even Santa Barbara now has a program of greeters like the hosts. Here we have the hosts. Berkeley, I think, has the, what do they call them? They call them guides, and in Santa Barbara they're greeters, and these are all little paramilitary police groups, the eyes and ears of the police, kind of like what they have in Guatemala. They have a civil militia that's supposed to root out the radicals and guerrillas and organize the villages so the military can come in and control things more effectively. Here, and it's of course something of an exaggeration to say that here, but these people do admit in their literature and when you talk to them that they are the eyes and ears of the police. They are the green greeters, the green-eared greeters in Santa Cruz. So Food Not Bombs is in need of your help. 425-3455. And there's a new radio station up in San Francisco for all you free radio buffs who happen to be wandering up that way. It's called Hate Free Radio, where that's H-A-I-G-H-T, as in the Hate Ashbury. And it's 87.9 FM. And Artful Andy Rose is behind that station. He's going to be coming down here this weekend to do a little nosing around. I hope. Wait, we have a call on the line. You are...
straight. It's not 3455, it's 3345.
Hey, I'm glad to hear that. Somebody is there. Let's say it was 3344.
45.
Just kidding. Just kidding.
Fuck you.
Yes, indeed. So let me, I want to thank, this is, I believe I recognize this voice. Your name is Jennifer, is it not?
Huh? No, Morningstar.
Ah, yes, Morningstar, of course.
Yeah.
The spiritual one.
The spiritual Morningstar zooming across the Milky Way.
Well, now, Spirit, as a star in the firmament, do you have any news on the streets from how people will regard this upcoming youth curfew?
You know, I'll tell you, I haven't really been hanging out downtown recently. I have noticed, though, that the main youth I've seen downtown have gotten a lot more, quote-unquote, I guess you would say, aware of what's going on, which is good. And,
and in what way are they?
Well, you know, they're watching out for the people in green, and basically. I mean, it's really sad. They have, like, these little mommy and daddy figures, or should I say nanny figures, walk around the mall. If you buy accident for some reason sit down in front of a store, you know, because maybe you just sprained your ankle, or because, you know, maybe say you're pregnant and you need to sit down for a real quick second, you know. Mm-hmm. And these people will walk around and tell you, you can't sit in front of the stores, you can sit on the benches, when there's like no benches open.
Now, you've actually seen this happening.
It happened to me, it's happened to many people.
When's the last time it happened to you? You are, I'm gonna reveal who you are. This is the Notorious Spirit, is it not?
Oh man, I can't say.
I had to, you know, reveal your identity because your fans out there need to know who you are.
Spirits and identity, go for it.
So, but this has happened to you recently?
Well, just like, I guess not this last Wednesday, but the one before that, a friend of mine, Kim, was sitting outside of Woolworth, and me and my friend Bob, we went inside to buy some bowls for Food Not Bombs because they were running out.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as we come outside, my friend is just sitting there, looking the other direction. This guy in the green shirt, we like to call him Wally, like, because he looks like a walrus.
Mm-hmm.
So we just call him Wally. So this Wally dude was, like, sitting there trying to get Kim's attention. Like, he was like, excuse me, ma'am, you can't sit in front of this store. And she wouldn't look at him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because she was just sitting there waiting for us.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, excuse me, just getting all on her face. And she just, like, looked away. She was squatting, and he was, like, hovering above her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I walked up, I looked at him, like, Kim, you ready to go? She goes, yeah. She gets up, looks at him, says, fuck you. And we just walked away. But, I mean, that shows how ignorant, you know, that streets are getting. Just, like, actually the same day, I've had, like, 3 run-ins that one day. Earlier that day, me and a friend of mine were walking down the mall, and I saw this guy. He, like, fell asleep in front of the Union Grove shop,
mm-hmm.
and that place is, like, closed on this day.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason or another, it was closed. And, we walked in front of it, we were like kind of walking by, and we stopped at the water fountain, and I saw there's a guy sleeping there, and this green shirt walked up, and like starts trying to harass him, like saying, excuse me, you can't be sleeping here, excuse me, like that. And then finally he just walked 10 feet away, turned around, started talking his walkie-talkie. So me and my friend decided to sit around and see what happened. He
mm-hmm.
called, he was trying to call on the guys to get the police there or something, but no one made it there. So finally me and my friend walked by him and just told him, you know, it's a shame, America's a free country and all, but you can't even sit down for a minute. And the guy's like, well, he's sleeping. I'm like, dude, where is he going to sleep? You can't sleep in the parks, can't sleep on the streets, where is he supposed to go? In the hospitals and the churches, they close at 5:30 in the morning. And he thought about it, and my friend told me that after, there's another friend of mine who stayed at the scene. After he walked away, the green shirt just kind of like looked at the guy for a little bit and then walked away.
Really?
Yeah.
Good work. Did, you didn't tell him, of course, that he could go out to the shelter, I mean, the open-air shelter, or the acre property at Highway 1
and
Highway 9.
Well, that's what he said, and I told him the majority of them, like, around 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, you have to wake up.
That's true. You have to pull down your tent, I believe, by 8 in the morning.
And oh, at that shelter, yeah, you got to pay 50 cents in there, which, you know, promotes panhandling.
Actually, there's no, I don't think there's a charge now. There was a charge last year, but they haven't had that charge all year.
Are you sure?
That's what I was told, but I haven't been out there and slept there, so.
Cool.
The last I heard of the 50 cent charge was last fall.
But still, even there, I mean, it has its own bureaucratic bullshit going on. Certain people aren't even allowed to be there, because they might have pissed off one of the people who are monitoring it or something.
Do you know people who have been excluded from that area?
Oh, many people, yeah.
Really?
I have never been, because I never hung out there that much. But I've known quite a few people who, just because they slept like past 8:30, or because they felt that something the monitors were doing wrong and they told them, the monitors wouldn't deal with it and just kick them out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I encourage those people to give me a call at 423-HUFF, because I'd like to either hook them up with Paul Merceau, who's the head of the program, because I think they should be allowed to return if they've been, you know, excluded, and then there's, you know, there's no violence involved, or
right.
The issue should be workable.
Yeah.
But, you know, I understand they have been trying to improve the regulations out there. I don't know. I'm acting as devil's advocate here.
Well, as far as you can improve them, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. It is also regarded as a little ghetto area where, you know, you can go, but it's the 1 acre of property, and it's controlled by the people who monitor it. I don't know how. I've heard that from Marathon Mark Webster, the guy who slept out there before he left town,
right.
That they were making some improvements, but he had numerous criticisms of what was still going on out there.
Well, they are making improvements, and the only way anybody can make improvements is we keep letting them to know.
Right.
So in the meantime, those people who are letting them know are getting, like, totally 86 from there.
Let me ask you this, Spirit. This is a little more personal question. What is it like to be a pregnant woman on the streets in Santa Cruz and poor? Because that's your situation, yes?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. It is kind of in my way situation. It's a lot better than being in a big city. I can say that much. But when it comes right down to it, you still treat like shit. People treat you as though you should be totally excluded from society, as though you're a leper or something. And then people just look at you saying, oh, guy, you're not taking care of yourself or the kid because, you know, you're homeless. It's like, wait, home is where the heart is, you know. House is a different story. But being homeless, you know, it's like totally degrading the individual of any personality.
Right.
And overall, I mean, that's the kind of attitude I get from a lot of people.
Do you get access to any social services?
Well, recently I have, like, after, like, they give me a total runaround. And that's, like, a whole different trip. I mean, now I'm in a place, and that's only because at the point of pregnancy that I am right now, I just cannot deal with being on the streets.
So how far pregnant are you now?
I'm about 7 months now.
And describe for me, let's say, in the last month, points at which you become aware that it's different for a person who's pregnant, who's poor, than, let's say, than a person who's not. Or maybe, you know, you might even go beyond that and talk about what it's like to be a pregnant woman in Santa Cruz, period. Just as a woman here.
Just as a woman?
Yeah. I mean, but I like to look it up.
No matter where you go, you're going to find the same kind of people everywhere, same kind of attitudes everywhere. It's just what you take out of it, you know, and what you block yourself from. It's more of like, I don't know, I mean, before I was pregnant and now that I am pregnant, I don't feel much different in the attitudes of people. You know, there's still, like, a prejudice going because I am also of, you know, a darker ethnic color than other people.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, other people look at me as though, oh, God, look at this person. Totally irresponsible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, like, certain... Actually, people have actually walked up to me and said that to me on the first account. They're like, oh, God, you're totally irresponsible. It's like, you don't even know me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no matter where you go, you're going to find people like that. I've also found, like, amongst the community which I surround myself with, a lot of comfort and a lot of support. That's the only way I actually got into a place right now.
Are you still singing?
if you call it that.
So you're just kidding is still kidding around?
Huh? Oh, yeah. Actually, we're doing the hemp benefit in late August.
So this is, what, do you know the date for your, this is a, you actually are, you're the real impetus behind Just Kidding, right?
Well, if you call it that, yeah. No, I wouldn't say that. I'm just everybody else's drummer. I know nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I just keep the rhythm. That's all.
I see. So you're simply a camp follower, eh?
No, I'm just a slave.
You're a slave.
Yeah.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
So give us your date for the upcoming Just Kidding thing. And is there anything you want any other poor women who are pregnant out there to know?
As far as the date, I don't know when. It's going to be in late August, though, at the live suit. And for other people who are in the same situation as I am,
mm-hmm.
What can I say, man? Just, you know, hold on to your guts and follow your soul, because, I mean, fuck, that's the only thing you really got at this time of your life. Other people will try to persuade you into doing this or doing that, but only you know what's right.
Gotcha.
And it doesn't matter if you're pregnant or not. I mean, that's for everybody, you know.
All right, and we should point out that the number for Food Not Bombs is 425-3345, regardless of what any talk show host may have told you.
And that's the real reason why I called.
Well, thank you.
All right, man, take care.
Bye-bye.
is my face red? Yes, indeed. If you want to volunteer for Food Not Bombs, do call 425-3345, and not what that other man told you who was in the studio before. So, we actually got a call. I want you all to learn from that, that it is possible to reach the studio by phone. And if you want, you can call 427-3772. The lines are open, and we are ready to receive your words of wisdom. Hey, another call.
Hi there. You're on Free Radio.
Another woman.
Another woman.
Yeah.
Another one. I think I recognize his voice, actually. This is Lighthouse Linda.
Well, you better, young man.
I'll accept that.
I enjoyed listening to the last call in spite of the way you put women on the spot on the air.
Yes.
It was interesting to note that that caller's experience is that there's a greater prejudice against people of color or people who look like they come from third world or minority places than even against pregnant women who look like they're wandering around freely. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to add to the dialogue about homelessness in this context, and that's why I called. I want to let people know who might be able to benefit by this, that it may not last much longer, but in the state of California, if you have children, if you're responsible for children in any way that the state can legally comprehend, you're entitled to certain benefits that help either pay for the security deposit to get in a place if you don't have a home, or if you can't find a place, because of course they're overpriced for most of us, for what we earn or what we might get if we need assistance, then they can at least put you up in a hotel for up to 14 days. Now they make it ridiculous, like they have to be consecutive days, and of course hotels bounce you out on weekends so they can charge more, but those benefits are important to know about while people still have them, because they can take a lot of stress out of the lives of small families that don't have the kind of money we're expected to run on in this society.
Now, who should people call if they want more information about this?
Well, if they want to call me, my phone number is 426-7701.
426-7701.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a beef with this program right now because it seems it's easier to get the emergency hotel assistance than the security deposits, and I intend to change that, but it might mean going to Sacramento, so...
Now, what is the name of the program?
This is called Emergency Homeless Assistance, and it's for people who are on AFDC or could get AFDC, what the county calls presumed eligible.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you have a small family, even if you're not getting that kind of a subsidy from the state, but you think it's time to get off the street, you might check it out. Because you can always resign, you can apply for AFDC, get the security deposit, maybe get the AFDC while it works for you, and then quit whenever you want to, just by making a phone call to the person they call your eligibility worker. Also, they don't volunteer this information in that system, but you can get any one of this three-part set of benefits, Medi-Cal, food stamps, or a cash grant, if you're eligible for it. But you don't have to take all three of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But you might have to assert that you know that.
Mm. So, people who have questions about this can give you a call at 426-7701?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I try to work with homeless families throughout the community or the county, and I work through a project called Housing Now in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes Housing Now in Santa Cruz works in collaboration with Welfare Parent Support Group. I'd like to give you their number, too. It's 458-9070.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's usually someone there on weekday afternoons at Welfare Parent Support Group. Or call me and cope with my answering machine if I'm not in, 426-7701. I also wanted to tell you that I was interested in the story about the hosts because I saw something like that happen myself. Somebody was sitting down near the catalyst and these guys in their little authority jackets come along and they tell some guy, you can't sit there. They're not very polite about it and they don't give a damn how many people up and down the block hear them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a power trip. It turns out the guy they were talking to built the catalyst, had built that very window frame that he was sitting beneath. He didn't take it very well.
When was this?
This was in late May.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to know there are some nicknames for these guys. I wish we had a cartoonist among our friends.
Yeah, I think that it'd be helpful for people to actually trail these hosts around and keep an eye on them and report to the community as to what's really going on.
Have a sub-cop watch?
Yeah, I'd say so. Host watch, perhaps.
Yeah. I think we should feed them saltine crackers and tell them to sit down or something.
Yeah, maybe they need to take a break.
No, I'm just kidding. Seriously, I think we need to talk to their employers. If you can figure out whether it's the merchants or the city council.
First alarm security is what they tell us.
No, I don't mean the hiring squad. I mean who pays them.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the ad in the paper. First Alarm says, even if you've worked for us before unsuccessfully, we'll consider anyone.
So in other words, the hosts is constitutes the rejects of the rejects, at least if First Alarm Security said it'll take even people they've rejected and put them into the host program.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your reading of that ad?
Yeah, or people who have rejected them, they're begging desperately for employees to go around bullying people for acting like human beings in the downtown corridor.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I mean, they have to make this thing work in order to get the money the city's promised them, I guess, so you can't blame them for that. It's jobs in a town that's job scarce, but I think we need to talk to people above them.
Well, as I was telling people on the air earlier, the Downtown Management Corporation will be meeting at 8:30 on July 20th. That's a Thursday. And they'll be meeting in the building right above, in the Melrose building, with Paper Visions is on the bottom. You got